So this morning, I continue a series looking at the lessons we can learn from the classic Charles Dickens story, A Christmas Carol, a holiday favorite. Written in 1840s Victorian England as one of five Christmas stories, A Christmas Carol tells the story of a miserly, avaricious, cold-hearted Ebenezer Scrooge, who on a certain Christmas Eve was visited by the ghost of his deceased business partner, Jacob Marley. Marley's ghost had crossed the ethereal boundary to urge his former colleague to change his self-centered, uncompassionate ways. To change before death prohibited any possibility of reform. A Christmas Carol is most famous for the series of spectral visions which descended upon Scrooge, the ghosts of Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas yet to come. Now, there are literally dozens of versions of A Christmas Carol that have been made for television or stage or screen, featuring everybody from Basil Rathbone, Frederick March, Albert Finney, and George C. Scott, to Bill Murray, The Muppets, Mr. Magoo, which is the version that introduced me to the story, and of course, Mickey Mouse's A Christmas Carol. And nowadays, it's actually very easy to read the actual Dickens text, because since it's so old, it's in the public domain, and you can download it for free from many sources on the internet. When Marley's ghost departed Scrooge's dark, cold, and drafty bedchamber on that Christmas Eve long ago, the first of the three promised visitations commenced. Dickens described the ghost of Christmas past as being at the same time young and old, with youth's vigor and age's frailty, with the long white hair of an octogenarian, but the fresh, unwrinkled skin of a child. The ghost of Christmas past reached for Scrooge's hand and took him on a flight through space, through time. The ghost explained that they would not visit all Christmases throughout history, but only the Christmases of Scrooge's past. As he saw the hills and fields and lanes where he walked and played as a boy, Scrooge could also hear the bleating of sheep. He could smell the aromas of chimney smoke and fields freshly sprinkled with rain. He saw the stark boarding school classroom, for he saw himself as the child of Ebenezer, sitting alone, abandoned, reading. You see, the youthful Ebenezer and his father had had a very, a difficult relationship. Apparently, his father had shipped Ebenezer off to boarding school so as to not be bothered by his presence. And while his classmates had been collected by their families to spend the Christmas holiday back at home, Ebenezer's father had chosen to keep Ebenezer away. But this moment the ghost was allowing Scrooge to revisit was that point when his father had come to his senses, had a change of heart, and had resolved to restore his relationship with his son. From his vantage point with the ghost of Christmas past, Scrooge saw, as if it were happening then and there, when his father had sent a carriage bearing Ebenezer's beloved sister to gather him up and to bring him home for the holiday. The Ghost of Christmas Past also showed Scrooge himself as a young man apprenticed to the businessman Mr. Fezziwig, eagerly learning from his encouraging employer and mentor, learning the value of diligence, the value of industry. Scrooge also detected in his younger self the first hint of avarice, an unhealthy fascination with money and the power that one can derive from amassing it. And finally, through the agency of that ghost, Scrooge saw his first love, a young woman named Belle. He saw the affection they had for each other. But in that same moment, Scrooge also beheld how over the years, the young Ebenezer's preoccupation with attaining success and wealth had lured him away from Belle's sincere affection. And from this perspective of hindsight, Scrooge began to shed a tear for one of the true treasures he had chosen to turn his back on all those years ago. His willful abandonment of his sweetheart, Belle, in favor of his business aspirations. It was that choice that had resulted in Scrooge's solitary existence, without the companionship of the dear one who loved and wanted to be loved. This is what the Ghost of Christmas Past revealed to Scrooge. The perfect Christmas. We've all heard that expression. Maybe you're preparing to host family members for Christmas and you want everything spotless, the decorations mounted with precision, the menu memorable. Maybe you're looking for the gift for that special someone that captures that person to a T and that no one but you could have selected. Maybe you're hoping for a light, fluffy snowfall on Christmas Eve that looks beautiful but doesn't cause any problems for travelers. What would make Christmas perfect for you? Well, you see, there's one problem. Unless you are like Ebenezer Scrooge and plan to observe Christmas by sitting alone in your dark, cold, drafty bedchamber, you're probably going to be celebrating with people, relatives, friends, neighbors, people you love, people you probably like to spend time with. And here's the news flash. People are imperfect. Almost by definition, that's what we are. Each of us is an imperfect person trying to be in relationship with other imperfect persons. We're not proud of every single thing we've said or done. Like Ebenezer Scrooge revisiting the strained relationship with his father, and the failed relationship with Isabel. It's not hard for us to bring to mind ways that we have hurt others emotionally, perhaps physically. It's not hard to recall ways that we've disappointed people who matter to us. Now, what does our imperfection have to do with the birth of Jesus? Simply this. Jesus brings into our lives, he brings into our past the power of God's forgiveness, which overlooks our imperfections, our failings, our sin. God's forgiveness, brought home to us, made real for us through Jesus the Son, God's forgiveness enables us to overcome the sins of the past that, like the chains enveloping Marley's ghost, they hold us back and they pull us down, prisoners to our past. Asking the Spirit of Jesus to live in our hearts and minds, God's forgiveness enables us to forge a new future that's not shackled by the mistakes or the insults or the failings of our past. Joined to Christ, we become new beings. Hear what St. Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians. This is coming from a fresh translation called The Message. Paul wrote, "Because of this decision to put our trust in God's Son Jesus, we don't evaluate people by what they have or how they look. We looked at the Messiah that way once and got it all wrong, as you know. We certainly don't look at him that way anymore. Now, we look inside, and what we see is that anyone united with Christ gets a fresh start, is created new. The old life is gone, a new life burgeons. Look at it. All this comes from the God who settled the relationship between us and him, and then called us to settle our relationships with each other. God put the world square with himself through the Messiah, giving the world a fresh start by offering forgiveness of sins. Earlier you heard Amy read one of the stories about Jesus calling individuals to become his closest colleagues and friends, inviting them to be his disciples. The story we heard was about Jesus calling the tax collector named Levi, that was his Jewish name, you know him better by his Greek name, Matthew. Now you probably know that in ancient Palestine, people who worked as tax collectors were held in low regard by their Jewish kindred. People who engaged in tax collecting were viewed as sellouts, in cahoots with the enemy, which is how the Jewish people viewed the Roman forces occupying Palestine. But Jesus saw Matthew sitting at his collection office, and Jesus asked him to join this group he was putting together. And Matthew accepted. And then that night threw a big party for his new friend Jesus. Among the guests were religious professionals who worked at the Jewish temple. And they wondered what sort of rabbi, what sort of teacher this Jesus was. They couldn't imagine how Jesus could take into his inner circle a fellow with a history of being, of all things, a tax collector. And yet Jesus didn't hold that against Matthew, did he? Jesus was able to look past Matthew's past. Imperfect as it had been, Jesus was able to offer him the embrace of welcome through the gift of forgiveness. Jesus offers the same to you and me. Maybe we cower because of the pain caused by something someone said or did to us in the past. Maybe we cringe because of some physical or emotional injury that we innocently or purposefully inflicted on someone. The good news of the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, is that we are not prisoners to our past. The hurt that others caused, the hurt that we've caused others, can be overcome, can be forgotten, can be forgiven when we allow the grace of Jesus to enter our minds and hearts, to guide our actions and words. The ghost of Christmas past allowed Scrooge to see the origins of the emptiness and the isolation and the bitterness that characterized his life. And yet, by recalling those memories, Scrooge found the first glimmer of hope for personal redemption. He discovered that regret was a baby step toward repenting for his self-absorbed past. He discovered that compassion was a baby step toward asking for forgiveness and offering forgiveness. We too can overcome our past. Our personal past are ready to be washed in forgiveness because of God's unconditional love, which we discover in the birth of Jesus. Because of that love, we are forgiven. And we, in turn, can find the courage, the strength to offer forgiveness. Thanks be to God.